This is George Hoffman speaking here today with Warren Paul Jenner John, better known as Pete, in the wonderful Adirondacks in the town of Jay, New York, on a beautiful, beautiful day. So I'll begin by asking you, Pete, if you could just give us a little bit of background about your education and upbringing. Where were you born? You know, just so that we know a little bit about history.
Well, I was born on the first day of my life, on the outside, that is. in 1922 in Milwaukee, St. Joseph's Hospital, up on one about third or fourth floor up there somewhere, and lived there for the first quarter century of my life. I went to all my schooling there. We moved a lot. This was during Depression.
Yes.
And for a period there, my folks were moving to humbler and humbler circumstances so that we'd be able to pay our rent. We were renters for much of that time.
Yes.
So we were moving on the average about every year, every 2 years to, you know, to keep things in financial perspective. I wasn't too much aware of this, but in later years I understood it.
We sure.
Talk a little bit about it. Anyway, and I went to undergraduate school there at what was Milwaukee State Teachers College. And it was a rather good school. They had good faculty there in the arts and the music areas. And it was from there that I went off into the service. And
that was World War II.
Yeah, World War II.
And the war had already started.
Yeah, I had started college and during that period, during at the end of my freshman year, I think.
So that was around 39.
Yeah, well,
40.
I started college in 40.
40.
And, you know, the war started in 41.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I did get in about a year and a half before I went off and was in the Air Corps, Army Air Corps. They didn't have just Air Corps at the time. It was the Army Air Corps, and I was there in that until 45, which time I came back and finished off my undergrad, and there were a couple of my friends who sort of recollected at about that time, and then we all went off to the University of Wisconsin in Madison for graduate year.
So that would have been 40.
That was 47.
47.
That I finished that up. And then I worked for a year for Elizabeth's, that's my wife, Elizabeth, for her father, who had an ecclesiastical decorating studio in Milwaukee. And with my art training, I was able to do some designing. I was never there long enough to get into doing the long figures and all that, but I did a lot of spot figurations of symbols that were used in the
painted on the walls or
church windows.
Stained glass. Interesting.
So I got into stained glass, and actually I carried that out on my own for some years after. I actually had a one-person show on through NYU at a gallery they had right on the square there.
On Washington Square.
Washington Square at the time. They had a little walk-in gallery, and they had all stained glass pieces. But this was the pre-epoxy period.
Yes.
And I was also experimenting with adhesives, and I wrote to every known adhesive manufacturer at the time, and some of them would send me back samples that they were in the process of trying to test out, and would, you know, ask whether I would then send them a report. And DuPont sent me their famous Duco cement, which I had known about. That's the kind of thing, you know, where you cement a teacup handle on that, and then, yeah, then the whole cup falls off. You have a hot lap full of tea. But anyway.
So this was in Madison.
Well, this was after Madison, and this was in Milwaukee.
Oh, back in Milwaukee.
Yeah, the Conrad Schmidt Studios. Mm-hmm. And after I was there a year, Elizabeth had previously gone to Black Mountain for a year as a student, Black Mountain College.
Black Mountain College in North Carolina. North Carolina.
Right. And I had feelers out through teachers' placement bureaus. I had about three different ones going, one working out of Chicago, one from the Madison University Placement Bureau, and one for the Milwaukee Teachers College Placement Bureau. And, oh, I got a nibble here and there, and I would correspond, but nothing was happening.
In terms of a teaching job.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was holding out for a college level. A lot of my buddies were willing to take high school and so forth, but mm-hmm. I didn't want to have the kind of discipline problems that I knew they were mm-hmm. running to, or if they even took lower grades. You know, I didn't want to have to spend time passing out paste and rulers and stuff like that. Yeah. I wanted to teach art.
Real art.
You know, with sure. people who were interested in it, come there because they wanted in the first place.
Of course.
Yeah.
Sure.
But anyway, nothing was happening, so Elizabeth said, why don't you come off to with me, and we'll go to Black Mountain. It was so great. Albert is such a great teacher, and there are other great faculty people there, and a great...
this is Joseph Albert.
Yeah. That the whole aura of the kind of student that was there mm-hmm. Was so exhilarating, she felt. And I had GI Bill, and that's how I finished up with the graduate degree, and I still had about a year and a half, 2 years of it left.
Ah.
Spent a little finishing off undergrad, did the whole grad year, and then I had a bit left. So I used some of it to start off at Black Mountain, and I worked, Albers liked the way I worked, and I became his assistant, and in that transition, then I no longer had to pay student fees.
Ah.
So, and then when Albers left, things that he taught were divided up between Joe Fiore and myself. So I taught the design and color, and Joe had the painting.
And was that strictly according to the Albers system?
Oh, at that time, yes. I was. There were people signed up for classes of his, and then he was no longer going to be there. So even if I had thought of going off on my own bent, it was important that I sort of carry on what the people came there for.
Of course.
But that was no... imposition, because I was sold. I mean, he introduced a whole new outlook on color mm-hmm. for
yes.
me that I had not had. I had good teachers, but color was you know, hue, value, and intensity, and those old saws. And mm-hmm. I mean, my teachers, though they were competent, they were all derivative from the Ashcan school.
Yes.
You know, Grant Wood, Thomas Benton, Fletcher Martin, the Sawyers in the New York area, and so forth, that whole crowd. And so those were the models. And what was thought about color at that time was what came out of that kind of background.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
when I started working with Albers, this was a real eye-opener.
Of course. Of course.
And, but, Elizabeth and I realized when we were, after we were at Black Mountain a couple of years, being a community, a real community college where we were isolated from any town. They had their own farm, their own dairy herd. The students helped make butter from the milk, which was served in the dining hall, and the milk, and some of the produce, which was raised.
I never knew that.
Oh, yeah. And there was a work program. So some of the students would work on the farm, some would do upkeep on the road, some would help out doing things with the buildings. The first half year, Elizabeth and I volunteered to take care of the school store, which I had never done anything like in my life previously.
But it was a private institution.
Yeah.
Not a state.
It was private.
Private.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Set up in that cooperative way.
Yeah. And then they had a print shop, and it was currently idle because the fellow who had been the printer there had left at some time previously, a couple of years previous to our arrival there. And I had taken printing as a sophomore in high school at Boys Technical High School in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And I learned to set type at the time, and to run a simple press and do the makeup and all that kind of thing. And so at one of the usual meetings there it said, you know, we need people to do these different jobs. We haven't had anyone to do printing for a long time. Is there anyone here who could handle a print job? So I sat quietly waiting to see for any hands were raised, and there weren't any.
Whoa!
And so I said, well, I had printing as a sophomore in high school, and I do what I can. But anyway, I got up there and, you know, checked out their type supply, which was meager and jumbled, as you can expect. And that's what they call pie in the printing trade, when you
yes.
have to go and re-sort everything, redistribute. And the rollers, they were gelatin. And
yes.
The mice had eaten about half of those out. There were great big gouges out of the rollers. So it took a little doing finally to get another couple of fonts of type and get some fresh rollers and so forth. But
the shop was set up as a type shop, not as a etching studio.
No, it did not
or
do
lithography.
It did not do artwork. It was strictly for the printed
letterpress, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so then while I was there, I did all the programs.
Now, were students studying?
Students then studied with me to learn how to set type, and I had students doing programs, printing up programs.
But in an artistic way.
Well, we used all the best knowledge we could. I mean, we looked at good printing work, you know,
yes.
hand printing work of
yes.
different peoples, and were interested in spacing and general type design
mm-hmm.
kinds of things. And
that was part of their art training.
Oh, yeah. And we did a modest study of typefaces and so forth, so mm-hmm. they were able to recognize different ones and yeah. call on different ones because of a certain mood that was required and
yes.
that kind of thing.
Yes. So this was about 48, 49?
Oh, this was... Yeah, we got there in, I think it was the summer of 48. Actually, if you want real history on this, the Mary Emma Harris book is here. She knows more and remembers more and has more collected about us than we remember ourselves.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, she is a fantastic source and is a very accessible person.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm,
anyway,
mm-hmm.
I recommend her highly. But anyway, my point was that after Elizabeth and I were there a couple of years, because of the community arrangement, we mainly all ate together in the dining hall. There were two chefs, local people who were hired. Sometimes there were three, but mainly there were two chefs who did the real overseeing of the cooking. But everything from there on down or out was cared for by the students. So they were all the chef's helpers. They did serving. They helped work out menu. And then we all ate together.
Mm-hmm.
And in that kind of context, the faculty were very much intermingled with the students, especially the younger faculty. The more aged ones like Max Dane, who is philosophy and mathematics. He was from the Planck Institute?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was one of those folks. You know, because there was a little coterie of scientists who did things, some important discoveries on magnesium or something like that. His name was Hansgerg. And then, of course, there was Hansgerg. That was, I don't know how you spell his name, but he had a reputation as a scientist. And then, of course, there was Joseph and Annie Albers.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to leave because of the Bauhaus being on the blacklist as far as Hitler goes, and especially in that Annie was.
To leave Germany.
Jewish or partly Jewish.
Yes,
That's how Mountain inherited this little collection of.
Yes.
And then there was a musician, Jalowitz. He was a. A conductor, and then later there was Robert, forget his name, who worked with Reinhardt,
the theater director,
theater person. So they had really some very capable people who came in with world views into this little community in Western North Carolina.
And who were some of the other art people?
At the time, let's see, outside of Albers, it's mainly people who came in, like on summers.
Mm-hmm.
There was Leo Omino came in. De Kooning was there for a while. Franz Klein, I think, was there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And
these were slightly younger guys.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Robert Turner came in ceramics. M.C. Richards came in ceramics and in writing. I know I'm missing some names.
Oh.
But anyway.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the picture.
Yeah.
And being, as we were sort of continually in demand and meeting with students, and they would come in to our little digs and meet, and we'd talk and go over stuff. And Elizabeth and I realized, even though we had been married in 47, and this was now 49 thereabouts, we really hadn't had a married life together.
Right.
We were both going to college together, and we would.
You were grad students.
Yeah, we made arrangements to. Meet, why don't we both sit at the same table so we can talk this evening, And we both had an idea that we would. I had a year of GI Bill left to them. I said, this will be our chance. Let's go off to Europe for a year, because that would have been enough for us to get by on. Sign up with a school. You had to register for a school, so you got a stipend as you did so. And a couple of my friends, not at Black Mountain, but back from Milwaukee, who were doing the same thing at about the same time. In fact, it was Elizabeth's sister and her husband, my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, who went over to Paris, and there were only two schools, ateliers, that accepted the GI students,
mm-hmm.
with the arrangement with the government, so
mm-hmm.
you could attend. and one was Academy. No, there were three of them. Academie Julienne, Academie de la Grande Chaumière, and Leger, Fernand Leger.
Mm-hmm.
And so we spent this year in Europe. I was supposedly attending school, but I'd had a school up to here by that time.
Right, oh.
And I went there to sign in and so forth.
Yes.
At least once a week, and then, but we did work. I painted, and we did a lot of travel,
mm-hmm.
and especially looking for good old stained glass windows. You know,
mm-hmm.
we would frequent Chartres, for instance,
mm-hmm.
because that being one of the real places that was always lauded as a real source from glass of glass at its best.
Of course,
and. After the year was up, and I ran out of the GI Bill to the very last day, and this was in July, and we came back then, and we figured, well, we can land anywhere we want, you know, and start life back in the States.
About 1950?
This was, yeah, 50, 51 around in there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Mariana will have those
yeah,
states.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway... so we, Elizabeth was keen on dance and had done dance teaching at Black Mountain. She'd studied when we would have holidays and so forth. She studied with Martha Graham,
mm-hmm.
and then Merce Cunningham showed up at Black Mountain. In
mm-hmm.
fact, there's a New Yorker profile on him in a recent publication.
Yes.
And it does mention his early start at Black Mountain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anyway, there is probably one of the most often published photos of him with a student sort of reaching out as this young woman is facing him. That's Elizabeth.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah, so it's in several of the books. It's in one of his and one a book of, I think, Rauschenberg, Cage, and Cunningham.
Yes.
They were sort of a triumvirate.
Yes.
And anyway, Elizabeth then had a chance to continue and immerse herself more in dance. So we landed in New York, and we had the obligatory loft on the Lower East Side.
Uh-huh. Early days.
Diagonally across from the Sun Sing Theater. And right on
Chinatown?
Yeah, right on the edge of Chinatown and in the Jewish community. And I scrabbled around for work. I think through mail, I had a part-time job at Cooper waiting for me. Cooper Union.
Through the mail?
Through contacts and so forth.
Yes.
And I think I went... I had to go for an interview, and
yes,
Dana Vaughn was the dean of the arts at the time.
Uh-huh.
And so I talked, I don't know, 2-3 evenings a week or something like that. So that was my one little foot in the door. And the Lippolds, Richard Lippold, was living off of Amsterdam Avenue up in, I think, up in the 80s, I forget exactly where. I painted their apartment. You know, anything to, you know, keep scrabbling around.
How did you know the Lippolds originally?
They're both from Milwaukee.
No, that's right, of course.
Yeah.
So
and
you
Elizabeth
knew, him?
Knew Louise.
I see.
And then got to know Richard.
And
then
they came
to Black Mountain then too.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I mean as visitors.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That,
so
that's,
you had this history, this
yeah.
connection.
So here's the connection now. That's what's leading us up to Hunter.
Of course.
Because Richard was beginning to be quite busy, and he had these different jobs. In the city, he had some things to do at Hunter, and then he had a couple of these progressive schools out a ways in New York State, not too far away from Manhattan. I don't know, not Sarah Lawrence, but there were a couple along that line. Mm-hmm. One of mm-hmm. them, I understand, is trying to emerge with some other places because it's going under. Not enough students.
Currently.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, as Richard was getting more and more active in with his creative work and wasn't having to teach, I mean, he liked doing it in a way because he was a kind of a showman.
Yeah.
Liked to display his flair for many things. But on the other hand, it was an imposition as far as his own work time.
Yeah.
Was, which, you know, you can understand.
Sure.
And so he started. He knew I was in need for work, and so he set me up this. He had this. It was a perspective course, I think, at Hunter. And must have talked me up to Ed Noel's Lutz, and I came down, and I looked as though I had one head in all the other parts. And I was recommended by Richard, so here I am suddenly, and okay, here's another part-time job. So I don't know whether there was some other kind of drawing kind of thing that I taught as well, but the thing that sticks into mind was this perspective course. Mm-hmm. Now, Richard had already taught it in a previous year, or previous semester, whatever, and I asked him, you know, what it was he expected me to cover,
mm-hmm.
and what would be called for. And I remember his saying, well, as a final exam kind of, he was not an exam type person.
No.
You know, as a sort of a wind up to see what people knew, they had to do a circular staircase.
Whoa, good.
And that's one thing I remember rather specifically about that course and my connection with Richard. And I remember I was impressed by some of the students because there were a mixture of students, and there were a number of mature students and a number of mature women. I'm talking about like 40s.
Mm-hmm.
30s, 40s.
But it was a co-ed situation.
Yeah, it was co-ed, I think, mm-hmm. as I recall. And these women, the ones that stuck out in my mind, were from islands, like
Caribbean?
Jamaica and places like that,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time I'd heard English spoken with the lilts
the
that
accented
those people
English.
Had, and I was fascinated.
Oh, how wonderful!
By that,
yeah,
it was wonderful.
Yeah.
Now there.
Well,
are
that's one of Hunter's strengths is that it
yes.
has always had this varied population.
Yeah,
you know, this wonderful
and good
population.
For them.
Absolutely.
And there were two other tidbits of recollection, and I had mentioned to you briefly that there was another guy whom I sort of befriended while I was there. And I couldn't think of his name at the time, but I have subsequently remembered it as Hannes Beckmann.
Really?
He was teaching there. Hannes Beckmann. And
this is the first I've heard of him.
He must have come from Germany because he clearly had an accent.
Well, Lutz had connections with Germany. So she may have found this person.
And he knew well the faculty of the Bauhaus. In fact, he had some connection with mm-hmm. one or two of them mm-hmm. somehow, because he spoke of them when we would get together and talk about the gang back there. He was able to give some rather, you know, not just casual, but rather intimate. Not deeply intimate, I don't mean that.
No, I understand.
But enough to indicate that he was around these people and mm-hmm. enough to have conversations with
How
them and things like that. Now, I don't remember who it was of the names that we talked about back and forth, Schlemmer and Clay and so forth. But anyway, and he, as I recall, was teaching photography at Hunter.
How interesting.
Now, this, I think, was not his, you know, this was not his main love. I mm-hmm. think he was more into designing and things like that, as the Bauhaus had a strong head in that direction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I think it was one of these things where he needed work. I think he was living by himself someplace in the city. And so he probably knew enough about photography and got this job. It's like we're at the place I taught at later for a third of a century. We used to have people come in and take up the art history positions, but it turns out they were painters and they were posing as art historians,
of course,
you know, to support their painting.
Their habit.
Yeah, right. But anyway, I used to ride the public conveyance. I know the L was still functioning at that time, and I took it, I don't know, a couple times up to Cooper when I was teaching there, but I think most of the time I either went on the Lexington line
mm-hmm,
up
mm-hmm.
from down on East Broadway,
mm-hmm.
Get over to the Lexington line and ride up to Hunter, or I would take one of the bus, some kind of
sure.
surface transportation,
sure,
probably
sure.
the one that went up First Avenue or something like
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, Beckman and I would get on the same conveyance at the same time, and we would jabber away about Bauhaus and the characters there and that kind of thing, and a little bit on what we were doing. And then also there must have been some kind of like a cafeteria or an eating place in at Hunter.
Oh yes, there was.
Yeah, I vaguely remember. And so I used to get together with about the same two, three faculty people
mm-hmm.
at the time. Beckman was one of them, and there was another man whose name I forget, but who had recently been distinguished by something he had published, which was recognized. I mean, I don't remember his name, but all I remember was he was.
It wasn't William Rubin, was it?
No, not Rubin. I would recognize
the
name.
Was it Norris Smith, art historian?
I don't think this man was in the arts.
Oh, he was
in
another
arts.
Field.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. But anyway, that's the one other person that I can remember, and unfortunately I don't remember his name, but he was an interesting person to in the mix, you know, with
yes.
Beckman and myself, and we would talk about all kinds of things. Solving the problems of the world, but I see what we talked about didn't take somehow. We're shaped now than it was then. But anyway, that sort of sums up my Hunter experiences, except I always remembered it with fondness. I would have been happy to teach there further and go into the other fields. But I think it was Richard's job, who I was subbing for Richard.
I see.
And either Richard said, well, I don't want it anymore, which means that Pete Jenner John didn't have that job through Richard anymore.
Got it.
I think not too distant a time from then, I think Edna Wells Lutz either retired or had ill health or something, and someone else was there. So I did a good job for you, did I not Miss Lutz? There wasn't any Miss Lutz there to back me up. So
right, that was history.
That was it.
Yeah, yeah.
So also long about that time, since Cooper was a part-time job, Hunter was a part-time job, I got a work, I don't know how I got into it, but with the fabric designer weaver, Jack Lenore Larson.
Oh, yes.
And he had a loft on 22nd, near the Triangle Building.
The Flatiron.
Yeah, the Flatiron Building. And I don't know how I got in with him, but that all constituted some more of my part-time work.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
we got on very well. See, actually, in the teacher's college that I went to, I also studied weaving for about a year, and I knew how to string up a loom and all that kind of thing. Well, it turns out when I got in with Jack Larson, he needed me for just about anything except for weaving. So I did everything for him. I would get in the subway and deliver finished weaving work. I did delivered one to some big hotel where Senator Benton had a suite or something like that, and he was having blinds of his choice put mm-hmm. up there. And
right.
I got good at repairing looms. I was forever crawling underneath the looms and restraining the stuff and all that. And, but it was great because Jack and I got along very well, and I was able just to do all this kind of stuff, which he needed someone,
right.
someone for. And so that was another part of my livelihood, along with Hunter at that time. And then I also had another stint at teaching at a Robert Louis Stevenson school. That had been a kind of a well-to-do boys, mm-hmm. young men's mm-hmm. school, mm-hmm. Which had fallen on, I guess, on hard times because at that time, and this was up on upper Broadway, mm-hmm. you know, somewhere between the 80s and the 100s, something mm-hmm. up in there, mm-hmm. Was taking care of mainly GIs, returning, getting their, what do you call it, GRE or whatever it is,
yes.
Finishing off their high school credits, and some of them working towards college and all that kind of thing. And that whole place was set up for that. And so I taught there about 2-3 nights a week.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And God, you were busy.
Oh, I was busy, and yeah. I figured out how much subway time I was putting in.
Immense.
How much,
amazing.
With all these little squibs of work, I mean, it finally added together, and we hung on by our I was saying to Elizabeth a couple of nights ago, and I don't know what brought up the topic, but I said, you know, we were living so on such a thin thread at the time. I remember I had found a gold ring when we were at Black Mountain, just in the dirt, and it had some initials on the inside. So I made the announcement, you know, publicly at the dining hall, and you know, I found this a ring with these initials. And you know, does anyone recognize? No, not a soul came forward. From among the faculty, anyone who'd been there for quite a period of time, Nell Rice, for instance. But anyway, so I went into their files of anyone who had been there in the past or who had left their name as a visitor, and I found one set of the initials, and I wrote to this person and said, you know, I found a ring and it has some of your initials in. Never got an answer back. So anyway, I just had that ring. I probably still have it somewhere, but it was gold. And I remember so many times when we were at the loft, I said, I'm going to have to pawn this next week. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. we're not going to make it.
Yeah. Even with all this work.
Yeah, with all this work. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it was all part-time.
All part-time.
You were piecing it together.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And it would have been fun to work more at Cooper, but Cooper had only 3 full-time faculty.
Oh, wow.
They were the 3 deans.
My God.
Dean of Architecture, the dean of, I don't know what the middle guy was, and then the dean of the drawing and painting, who was Dean Vaughn.
Yeah.
Everyone else is part-time. I don't know whether that's changed, but that's the way it was.
Yeah.
There was not another full-timer on the staff. Now, there were a lot of people, you know, that I got to know, you know, coming and going, and we would swap notes on our teaching and all that. Also, by the by, I think I was the one that introduced color as a course at Cooper.
Because of the Albers.
And Dean Vaughn must have known something of Albers in the background, And the fact that I had these credentials coming from Black Mountain is what got me that job.
Sure.
And I was given the business of establishing a color course, which I did. And I did the same thing later at Adelphi, where I taught for many years.
And that's where you then went after all this part-time.
I started there as a part-time in the summer, and it worked into full-time and lasted for 33 years.
And that probably was the later 50s?
Yeah, that, let's see, yeah, that was...
57.
I started there in 54 as a part-timer.
I see.
I commuted out from the city.
Wow, yeah.
And I was still teaching at Cooper.
Yes, yes, yeah.
So I was teaching part-time in town and part-time out.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Do you... remember any of the art history people or any of the other faculty at Hunter passing in the hall or things that struck you, certain personalities stick in the mind.
I'm sure there was someone other than Beckmann. In fact, it was someone whom Richard had known, but I don't remember. You know, George, we're talking about a half a century.
I know. When I think of it, it is 50 years ago.
It's a half a century ago.
I mean, at that point, Motherwell and Basiotti's came in there around 52.
I remember Motherwell being mentioned. I knew of Basiotti's work at the time. In fact, a guy, I think, did he teach at Black Mountain and eventually? Yes, he was a close follower of Basiotti, Stamos, Theodore Stamos.
Of course.
Yes.
Sure.
And so there was that little thread.
Yes.
But outside of having met Motherwell, I think maybe once.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether I ever met Basiotis at all.
Other people who were there were Fritz Bultmann was a painter.
Didn't know Bultmann.
I think maybe in those days Michael Ponce de Leon was teaching printmaking.
I know the name, but I didn't know him personally.
Ruben came in somewhere along the line there.
Mm-hmm.
Did you encounter him at all, or any of the other art history people?
Not that I recall.
Mm-hmm. The place never was famous for faculty meetings, so.
Well, good for them. Well, and it's these part-timers who come and do their stint, and they bolt off to the next thing.
It's still that way.
You don't get chummy.
No.
Unless, as I said, we did some of us meet at some eating place within the school, mm-hmm. a cafeteria or someplace like that. And I'm sure I brown bagged it because I was so poor.
Right.
I didn't buy food.
Right. One last thing I just wish you could address a little bit is looking back, what would you say about the spirit of those times? You came through the war, then there was this burgeoning of education, and then you were in the heart of it in New York. I mean, looking back at that, how does that stick in your mind?
Well, for both Elizabeth and myself, and we were on the same page as far as all of that goes. Coming from Milwaukee was a nice town, but it was a comfortable family town whose arts were thwarted. They were thwarted as a result of World War I. Milwaukee was a very thriving Germanic community, as you know from all the beer,
of course,
commercials and all that kind of stuff,
and the immigrants.
Yeah, and but they had a very lively cultural life. They had all these Turnvereins, and they had classical musical groups.
Yes.
They did have theater companies, and there was much more of that kind of thing than you would expect from a city that is barely past a half million now, if it has. But what happened when World War I came, and there was, it's like people, anyone who looks like an Arab these days, you know, they're looked on with suspicion. Well, Germans don't look too different from other people, but here's this phone book with, you know, three. There was a real Germanic flavor that emanated from that city.
Sure.
And, of course, they drew back. They drew back. They had less social things publicized, ran fewer of them. My wife had an uncle who taught German and maybe something else like philosophy or the German philosophers or something like that at the university in Madison. And he began to feel such pressures. And he felt that, well, people in academia are above all of this kind of thing. If you're from another country and this was not your original language and all that, I mean, we're all in one big, wonderful academic community. We're all academicians, after all, you know, Herr Professor so-and-so, you know.
Right.
And he began to feel such coldness and all, to the extent that he quit his professorship and he went into the soap making business.
Incredible.
Went with a wagon and gathered tallow.
Incredible.
But this is a symbol of what befell Milwaukee.
Yes.
The reason why I got onto this was because it was so sleepy as far as the arts go.
Yes.
We had to get out.
Yes.
And that's what the Lippolds did. Louise was a dancer.
Yes.
Richard was an aspiring artist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we left.
And New York was an entirely different
Absolutely.
Kettle of fish.
Absolutely.
But I think the period also must have been unusual.
Yeah.
Post-war.
There are a lot of the guys involved who are GIs, ex-GIs, you know, and it was like being let out of a prison or something. Not only were they out of the service, but they were out of the war.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could breathe deep sighs of freedom, luxurious mm-hmm. freedom. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to wear a khaki outfit if you didn't want to.
And in terms of art, many things were new.
Right, and they were itching to get back at it again.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so a lot of the creative stuff. Of course, they were working with the old tools, but there was all this. Let's try something else.
Yeah.
Let's do
so
something.
So living in New York must have been exciting, despite the poverty and the hardship.
I mean,
with all that going on and that spirit.
There was a lot of fresh business going on. Dance, you know, the 92nd Street Y,
yes.
which was a beehive.
Yes.
And we got to know, we had already known Merce Cunningham and John Cage. They were at Black Mountain, so we just carried on
sure.
the relationship back up in New York.
Yeah,
we were quite good friends, and we went to everything they ever did.
Wow!
You know, all their first performances and rehearsals and everything else.
I mean, that alone was exciting.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I was able to contribute a little bit because in Europe, they had already done, they had made more advances in the electronic music field than we had here. And I went to some of the concerts of the Musique Concrète.
Yes.
And when I came back, and when John and Earl Brown, and Christian Wolf, and who's the big guy, composer, I forget his name, slips my name
right now. You mean contemporary?
Yeah, he was part of that gang.
I can't think.
But anyway, and I, you know, had some meetings with them.
Well, Cage.
But, and they were really interested to hear what I was able to glean from the several concerts that I had gone to.
Oh, in Europe.
It was sort of fun for them to hear what these guys were doing a step or so ahead.
Yes.
Because we were starting a little later here.
Yes.
But anyway, yes, this was part of what was booming, and dance was just coming alive. There we were much ahead of Europe, because Elizabeth tried to find some dance in Paris, preferably modern dance, which was her direction, as was Louise Leopold. And there was one person who taught something of a dance class in some thin way left over from a movement where modern dance was a little stronger, Wiegmann. And she was a part of that thread, but there was really nothing going on there in the way of modern dance. So while Elizabeth was looking for classes, this was Mila Cerule, I think was the name of this person, was the closest she could come to having something of what was going to develop into modern dance. And then the only other options were, of course, they were strong in the ballet aspect.
Yes,
so Elizabeth even went and became a canard with Mila Cerule. I mean, with Madame Nora. Madame Nora. But anyway, so when we got back to the New York and down on the Lower East Side, of course, we tapped into all these folks.
Of course.
I knew Joe Fiore from Black Mountain, and they were living in the city at the time. And there were a few other people at the time from the city. Joel Oppenheimer run into. I'm trying to think of several of the others who were right in the city, and we'd get together with different of them from time to time. But as I said, we went to all the openings. Ruth Asawa was another. She was in the city at the time. She was at Black Mountain. But interestingly, she was also at the Teachers College.
Oh.
Ruth Asawa. In fact, we got to know her there as undergrads.
In Milwaukee?
In Milwaukee.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah.
Now, I don't know whether it was through Elizabeth's influence, because she was at Black Mountain first, but as a result of her enthusiasm over the place and talking it up as she did, there was a whole grouping of people who came from this little school in Milwaukee, Asawa being one, John Rice was another, there was Nancy Smith was another one, there were two Bergman brothers who went to Black Mountain eventually. Elizabeth's sister, Elaine Urbane, went there, as did her two brothers, Rupert and Conrad Schmidt.
Wow.
And this was all through my wife's enthusiasm.
You were stalwarts of Black Mountain.
Yeah.
First of Milwaukee and then of Black Mountain.
Yeah.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
and then, of course, we continued to befriend. I was not a dancer, but I studied composition with John Cage, down at Black Mountain.
How wonderful.
And that was wonderful. And so I had been a musician, you know, all the while while I was working in the stained glass studio, I was playing evenings, you know, in local.
Oh, I see. What did you play?
Sax, clarinet.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, wind instruments. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, and during the summers, I went on the road with different bands.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, you lived through a wonderful period.
Yeah, yeah.
In all of these things.
And so going to the musical things was important to me, not
sure.
Just as a spectator, but I was an involved person, and I was always interested to hear what John Cage was up to next.
Of course.
You know, having worked closely with him. And, of course, Elizabeth was interested in all the dance. So she had studied with Martha Graham and then with Merce, and eventually she and Merce and Paul Taylor were in some of the... See, Elizabeth never got to perform. She was right on the verge of it, but probably this was when she had a child, and then once that was the case, then we stayed a few more years in the loft, and then we had to move out because there was no place that you could take a child out. You know, there were just stores and trucks.
No parks, no nothing.
Yeah, no parks, and if you did, they were paved with ground glass.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
So anyway, so we moved out. Out to the island, and then of course all the New York teaching. Once I made full time at Adelphi in Garden City, then we were happy to have that proximity. In fact, that was my angle, you know, that I would get some kind of job so we could stay close to New York.
Yes, of course.
Where everything was going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we would then come in. We would commute in for. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We didn't get to things as often as we did when we lived right in town, but mm-hmm. all the important openings, for instance, and musical concerts, dance concerts, we would always be there. So that was how Hunter got in the mix.
Yes, I see that.
Yeah.
Well, Pete, Jen, or John, thank you very much for this most enlightening interview, and look forward to getting this transcribed, and from my part, another conversation another day.
Well, anyway, are you thinking of doing a book, or Memories of Hunter?
Yes, we are, and I'll turn this off.